Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Established in 1963, Gulf Specimen Marine Laboratories is an independent, nonprofit organization that provides marine life to schools and research laboratories worldwide. Working out of the back of a rusted 1957 Plymouth station wagon, Jack Rudlow started GSML. Jack Rudlow is unique and a very special individual. I just love him. He's great. He has written numerous scientific articles and technical publications. He is the author and co-author of 9 books, both fiction and nonfiction. And we can call him a homeboy. He's lived here in Panacea over 50 years. So this hour, Jack Rudlow joins us here at 411 Teen. In addition, we have Jane Brain, and she is involved with the Gulf Specimen Marine Lab. Welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Morgan Butler. Morgan is an FSU grad. She majored in biology, minored in psych, and she's a dog trainer. And she is a volunteer at Gulf Specimen Marine Lab.
Hi, how are you?
Glad to have you. TCC, Anna Golden. She's on the staff at Gulf Specimen Marine Lab.
Hi, I'm so glad to represent Gulf Specimen.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. Welcome, all of you, to 411 Teen.
Thank you.
Jack, you are
great introduction.
You are just fascinating. How did you foster this interest in biology and marine biology? How did it evolve?
Well, the interest, I think, was there almost inherently. I mean, when I was 2, I was picking up snakes in New York. I had turtles. That was kind of – I lived near a park in Brooklyn, and that was there. And how that evolved into Gulf Specimen and what I've done with most of my life is pretty amazing. It just amazes me at times because, when as a kid I was drawing pictures of sharks and octopuses and turtles and all that sort of thing, and all that sort of through one thing or another came to pass.
It's in your DNA.
It's in the DNA.
It's in the DNA.
Yes.
Well, I tell you, I applaud you. And I just always am fascinated and love to talk with you. You always have so many interesting stories that I'm just kind of like, like a little kid. That's what I feel like when I'm talking to you. But you're a strong advocate and proponent of the environment. And can you share with us at least some of the major issues affecting the marine coastal milieu today, for those who are listening? And I know there's probably a plethora of them, but, just share.
Everybody loves the coast, all 10 billion of us, and we're all building on top of it and flushing our toilets into it and watering our lawns and enjoying it to death, and that's part of the problem. And, we see great treasures like Wakala Springs with crystal clear water that you could watch flip a quarter in and watch it tumble all the way down for, hundreds of feet, suddenly turn into a murky sewer and stay that way because, the most sacred thing in Florida is the developer. Build, money, money, money. Banks and developers, that is more valuable than anything in the world to Floridians and to our governor and to our politicians that are sitting there saying build and push the environment under the rug. Well, the only problem is we inherently love seafood. We love fishing. We like to look at birds. So we're meeting ourselves coming and going. But we need energy, so we're going to frack or we're going to drill or we're going to do this and that. But we love birds, but we love fish, but we're going to pollute. So we're a mess, in a nutshell. We're just a mess.
How do we intervene in that? I mean, can we live comfortably with both? Can they coexist?
I don't know. Why don't you ask some of the other folks around here?
I definitely think we're going to have to find a way regardless. I mean, our ocean's a big part of our environment and us being around. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just going to get worse and worse until finally something has to happen.
What I wonder, and this is to all of you, is are people really as sensitive and in tune as they need to be? I mean, do they recognize, does the general populace recognize what we are doing to the environment? You know, I mean, sure, there's a few, you know, that are into that. But I'm just wondering, the general masses, do we have an appreciation for the damage that we are causing?
One thing that's super small that we don't really think about that I've seen on Facebook a lot of people trying to switch is straws. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Straws pollute and cause problems, you know, with sea turtles or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And what do we drink out of a straw almost every lunch, every dinner? You know what I mean? We pop a straw on and we drink out of it. So I don't think anybody really knows what they're doing. And, you know, when you get out there and you see it in real life, I mean, for me, when I first started volunteering, you know, I'd heard of, like, you know, turtles getting wrapped in fishing line, but I didn't realize how often. I mean, that's like that's a constant thing that's happening all the time. And since I've been there, we've had two. And that, for me, that was a big eye-opener. Like, you hear about it, but you don't really know how often it's happening. So I would probably, you know, want to say that I don't think people really know what they're doing. I don't think it's there enough. I mean, I think there will always be people who are greedy and want, you know, what they want, but I definitely don't think it's people are informed as enough.
Well, you all are young folks, though, you know, and I just wonder how sensitive, you know, young folks, you all get smarter and smarter as it goes along, you know, and what do you think, Anna? I mean, where are things at? I mean, are your peers as concerned and involved as you all are?
I feel like there is, in fact, like a group that is, and a group that's trying to grow and get stronger in, like, environmental purposes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still such, like, a large group of kids who just, like, wake up in the morning, check their phone, and go throughout their daily life without putting any consideration whatsoever into what they're actually doing and what their lives are impacting this world.
But there's some efforts, and I guess I'll direct this to you, Jane, because, you know, there are some efforts out there. Like, I guess maybe I'm inaccurate about this, but it seems like everyone would know about the impact of plastic, particularly plastic bags, you know, and the plastic water bottles. I mean, do you think that's, or is it just me? Yes, here
I'm shaking my water bottle as we're sitting here, by the way.
That's what that is.
But what do you do with the water bottle when you're finished with it? Are you going to go throw it on the beach? Or are you going to put it where it can be recycled? I think that's a big question.
As I was listening to this part
of the discussion, I was thinking part of the problem, I believe, is that although there's a lot of information out about how all these things affect the environment, so many people live in environments that are not connected with nature. And so they don't have a way to relate to all this, like your straws or your fishing line and the sea turtles. Mm-hmm. If you don't get out there on the beach, if you don't live in a place where you can see the beach and see the ocean and see the lakes and spend time in that, if you're in a city, you have no way to relate to that, and so it's meaningless to you.
That's a good point. You're nodding your head.
Yeah, relatedness is definitely something I think that brings attention to things. Because, like I said, I didn't know how important it was until I showed up and was like, oh, my gosh, this is a big thing. This is important.
How long have you all been at volunteers, or your staff, at the Marine Lab? How long have you been around? And what was the impetus? Why did you want to get a job there?
Well, for me, I've always had, like, a passion for the sea. I remember I found, like, this old drawing in my drawer one time where I was, like, 8, and I drew, when I grew up, I want to be a marine biologist. And so that's, like, always been this sort of passion
for me. So it's in your DNA, too.
Yeah. but I have been involved with Gulf Specimen, whether it's, like, staff, volunteering. I did an internship in 2016, mm-hmm. so for roughly around 2 years, I've been involved with this just gem of Panacea, and it's stolen my heart.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm actually staff now.
Okay.
So I interned and volunteered January to February, I think. And then they were looking for somebody, and I was like, of course, that sounds amazing. So I started working there. I guess what kind of brought me to it was ever since I was younger, animals were my thing, mm-hmm. for sure. And it definitely was a passion, and it definitely brought out, you know, not working, doing something that I love to do
mm-hmm.
every day. So I started, you know, working with animals around like 15, 16, like just doing different things. And then I worked at a zoo and loved the animal behavior
okay.
part. And I guess what kind of brought me to ocean life was the ocean has always given me a sense of like calm. I'm somebody who struggles with different anxieties from day to day. And I, as a kid, I remember, you know, putting goggles on, laying down and blowing bubbles, and that being something that gave you that calm sense of being. And recently, about a year ago, I got scuba certified with Gabrielle Gabrielli.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember having like a slight panic underwater, and I did the exact same thing. So I rolled over and I watched the bubbles flow. And that was just, it's just something that really brings out something in me that just really makes me happy and want to be involved. And to see, you know, I want to help out as much as I can, you know, do whatever I can to help out, you know, our species or, you know, learning about different things and, you know, studying. And I definitely plan on being there for a lot longer.
When you think about your involvement at the Marine Lab, what have you found to be probably the most challenging?
Most challenging, I guess, would be to see some of the animals that, you know, are in bad shape. I mean, it definitely hurts my heart a lot, and I bring it home with me. So, you know, watching when we had to get Stumpy's flipper removed, which he's doing great, and, you know, he should be released soon, but that, you know, just stuff like that really gets to me and makes me upset, I guess, and that's
mm-hmm.
something that's hard for me. I go home and I'm upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
I wish
so you take it home with you.
Yeah, yes, yep.
What about you?
Yeah, I mean, that is really challenging. You know, we actually, like, just recently, me and Morgan, a turtle that we were helping to care for, we lost it, and it broke our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, like, going back to that, just the conditions of some animals in the ocean, you know, it's hit or miss, you know,
mm-hmm.
so.
You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this is an absolutely special, special program. We have Gulf Specimen Marine Lab folks here talking about their involvement, and we have Jack Rudlow. And Jack, I'm going to come to you and tell us what happens at the lab. What happens at the Marine Lab? I mean, I know. And 25 words are left. No.
How about one? Chaos. You know, I don't know why I put this. Okay. I have gone to some, like, new and so-called environmental facilities, and I sit there and I see, you know, glass and steel and you know, one or two people working, and it's quiet and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sometimes then go down to Gulf Specimen where I can't find a parking spot, you know, and there's school buses packed up there. There's hordes of screaming kids coming through there and
yeah.
being led around in field trips. There are parents carrying infants that were squalling because they're being pulled away from picking mm-hmm. up the starfish or having the fiddler crabs on there. Further chaos is where, you know, we survive as a biological supply, so we ship marine life to schools and research labs. And Michigan State needs their jellyfish, and it's late for a class or this and that and the other, and are the sea urchins fertile? And we're sitting there looking through microscopes and trying to see how many eggs are dividing at the same time. And all of this is going on. It's doing it all with virtually no money at all. You know, we don't get any money at all from from state, local, or federal government. We are a standalone organization, and money flows through pipelines. And we exist on, if we're lucky, a drip off a pipeline or the sweat that's on the condensation of the pipeline. Mm-hmm. But that's what Gulf Specimen gets. And yet I see millions and millions and millions of dollars dumped into school systems. And we're glad to have all the school kids coming down there. But frankly, it's really hard and sometimes discouraging to try to keep the operation going when I see this enthusiasm that's coming in. And I see these kids all over the place and adults too saying, oh, I really wanted to go into marine biology. And I really – but I had to become, you know, X, Y, and Z. I had to go to work for the bureaucracy and I had to go climb into a building and ride up an elevator every day when I really wanted to be out at the sea. And I'm thinking – boy, we got a screwed up society. Yeah. You know, there's something really, really wrong with our looking at it. And back to our bottles, I'm sitting here with my little plastic water bottle. Okay, we can have major military things developing bombs and everything else and weaponry to deal with how to kill each other. But where do we see the money to actually do the research on this plastic and to recycle it, and not just recycle it? And recycling, by the way, they just grind it all up and throw it into a furnace and burn it out to get a little bit more energy. I mean, potentially there's all kinds of things that could be done with this stuff. And I'm not seeing that. And I'm just saying it's kind of hard to be a generalist and a bit of a visionary when you're looking at a society that just is so locked into how they do things and how it's politics and what's right and what's proper. And so I feel very fortunate in a lot of ways that, you know, I was a path that I have a great high school education at Leon for and then 3 months of FSU and that ended my my academic career. And there has been some rough stuff, but I'm very grateful that that's the way it really turned out because I got to travel the world. I got to go on expeditions. I've worked with National Geographic and, you know, Smithsonian and Sports Illustrated and all that sort of thing. And had I been able to survive in academia, I would not have done all that. And then the other thing is that I'm looking at these guys here and they're going to get jobs, and one of the and if they they, you know, and they put Gulf Specimen on their resumes and they go forth into the rest of the world, we have a very good record of people getting jobs. Me personally, I'm a hardcore unemployable. Nobody would hire me. Now,
well, that's a good thing because look how this has evolved.
I know, I know. I mean, I was once at the Smithsonian magazine, and for some reason we were going through bad times, and I thought I might have to really get a job, and there was something we're doing in Washington, and I told the editor, look, I may have to come up here and need a job. And he looked at me, and then he started snickering, and he fell over and started laughing. And that ended it right there. But, I mean, you know.
That's good.
Yeah.
I certainly applaud you. You know, what would we do without you? I mean, you're just invaluable.
Well, tell that to the developers and tell it to our county commissioner and tell it to the governor and tell it to the various senators and all the other people that I've been battling with for all these years. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you hit it. I mean, it's about money.
It's about money.
It's about money. And so, you know, it's going to always probably be an uphill battle for you because, you know, you aren't bringing in the money that developers will bring in.
But there are some philanthropists out there, so we're looking for some of those.
And that is good. That's good. We're talking about Gulf Specimen Marine Lab. Someone share where you are, what your hours are. You know, they might be listening and not know, wait a minute, where is that? What are they talking about? So give us all the specifics on Gulf Specimen Marine Lab.
Yeah. Jane?
Well, I know you have a special event coming up.
Well, yeah.
I will tell you about the special event.
Tell us about that.
And then I'll defer the hours and all of that to someone who knows better. Gulf Specimen is getting ready for our annual Sharks and Chablis fundraiser. It will be held on Saturday, May 19th from 4 to 8 p.m. at the lab. There will be music by Wall Color Rising, a wonderful local band. Displays by Cheehaw Zoo, and I have to say they always have exciting displays with live animals. Florida Wild Mammal Association, FWC, and many others will be there as well. Guided tours of the aquarium will be ongoing through the event, and don't forget about the delicious seafood dinner catered by our local Seine Yard restaurant. In addition, we will have an amazing silent auction, which I always find many things to buy there. I do some of my gift shopping there. Tickets are $40 per person, which includes dinner and two drinks. Tickets can be purchased online or at the door. For more information, please call 850-984-5297.
Okay. We are talking about the Gulf Specimen Marine Lab, and one of you wants to share where they are and what the hours are. That would be very, very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Gulf Specimen is located in Panacea, Florida, and that is still in McCullough County, and I'm sure if all these young people with their GPSs can just search it and it'll pop right up. And the hours is, during the weekdays, it's from 9 to 5, and weekends, it's from 10 to 5.
Okay. Now, you all, you're a nonprofit organization, and I know you're open to volunteers. For those who may be listening and want to become involved, okay, what is the process? How do they become a volunteer? What does it require? Do they have to have background in biology, or can they just have a love for sea animals? They just want to do it. They think it's interesting. What do they do? Who do they contact? Where do they go?
Definitely just a love. I feel like we're always trying to get more volunteers. Because we're nonprofit, we're not really highly ran on lots of staff. You know, our volunteers make a huge part of our, you know, place. We have like two or three volunteers that volunteer 2 to 3 times a day, all day long. Like, it's their normal job. If you're looking, you know, to get more experience, and if marine biology is something that you're, you know, inquisitive about, 100% should be something that you do. You would contact our volunteer and intern coordinator, Leslie Breland, and she can get you all the info on that. I guess probably the biggest thing that we look for is somebody who is going to be dedicated and come, you know, if they say Monday during the time that they need, because we so heavily rely on those volunteers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you don't show up, we got to work on something else. So, definitely, if you're interested, it's a great way to get your hands in and actually legit touch things. You know what I mean? Get in there and
that's
touch
true.
Things.
That's
and, you know, learn all about it. So I would 100% recommend it, yes. Mm-hmm. Leslie
Anything
Breland.
You want to add?
Oh, and I was also going to add, like I mentioned earlier, I did a 2016 internship, so we do offer internships, and we have a lot of interns. We have them come in every summer, fall, and spring, and they help out a lot, too.
What's the qualifications for being an intern?
Well, I know I filled out, like, a complete application when I wanted to become an intern, and it's kind of like a class. They give you flashcards to memorize all of the animals and stuff like that. They give you homework, and it's an amazing learning experience. Like, that's one of my favorite things, one of my favorite memories that I have here is being an intern.
Okay. Jackie, you have... Oh, yes, go right
yes,
ahead.
I'd like to add, for people who are interested in volunteering but think you don't know enough,
mm-hmm.
Leslie
point.
Is wonderful, and she will train you and teach you everything you need to know about the lab and the animals mm-hmm. and the care of them and how to do field trips or whatever it is that you need to do. They're going to teach you exactly how to do it, so you don't need to have a big background when you come in there.
Is there any age specification? Old folks? Young folks?
Well, yeah. I think was it 16 or 18? I'm not sure what the cutoff is, mm-hmm. but there is a sort of a minimum at some place mm-hmm. in there, and I think we've had them as young as 16. Mm-hmm. But it's not just marine biology that we love yeah. to have as interns. Like, we have a retired architect. Mm-hmm. We have somebody mm-hmm. that works with computers, you know, and has taught computer work, and you know, we need carpenters and we need plumbers and we need all kinds of people that can do all sorts of things and designs. And right now we're trying to to apply for this Triumph Gulf Coast funds which was resulting from the oil company. And we might be one of the few things that are really impacted by oil back in that days that hopefully we will see something to come out of that. But to put together a massive application like that really takes a lot of clerical and research and all that sort of thing. And we certainly can't afford to pay for that sort of thing. So we need our friends to help us. And
so
they're helping us.
you can use volunteers in any walk.
Right,
that's what
exactly.
I hear you saying. I mean,
yes.
As long as you want to volunteer and it is such a cool place to be at, you know,
absolutely.
Then that's where to go.
We need gardeners.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Jane's taking a master gardener that's class.
Right. So. Oh, are you? To apply some of my learning down there.
Absolutely.
Well, what are, and Jack, I direct this to you, but all of you, what are, you've been involved in environmental activism. Now, what are some of the major issues now surrounding the marine environment? For our listening audience, people, again, need to know. I mean, we know that plastics and the pollution, but just what are some of the issues today? So whomever wants to go.
I'm just saying there's an endless buildup of nitrates. Nitrates come from fertilizers, it comes from sewage, it comes from runoff and that sort of thing. Nitrates and phosphates. And that's what goes into our waters and that's what ultimately, you know, if we have too much nitrates that we're exposed to, we're not going to survive. We have an ongoing issue with sea turtles, you know, sea turtles and man. And and unfortunately, the most beautiful turtle of all in my book is the little green turtles. I mean, they're absolutely gorgeous things, but they have this hideous disease called fibropapilloma, which is like a herpes. And it looks like these disgusting tumors that are coming out of their skin and their eyes and that sort of thing. And, you know, we have to work with other places that can do surgery on to remove these tumors, but we don't know how well they survive afterwards, and it's a very expensive and costly business. And, you know, people don't really know about this.
That's
it's a
right.
lack of education. And quite frankly, our schools, every one of our schools should be teaching things about the life history of a blue crab. You want to eat crab salad? We'll better know how that crab comes into being. Do we teach about that? No. Do we teach where the mullet – when fishing communities and everything else? You know, I defy people to really go to a school system and ask them how much do they really know about a mullet. You know, I love mullet. We eat mullet. Mullet's part of the thing. But, you know, the mullet spawns, what happens to its larvae, how it exists in the wetlands. I mean, take the wetlands, for example. Wakulla County, and its sterling wisdom is the one of the few places to denounce and refute its wetlands ordinance and repeal it. I mean, and then the insult to injury is when they were, you know, the whole battle was going on, is in St. Mark's, they have the Stone Crab Festival. And they're holding up pictures of a stone crab saying, you know, vote against the wetlands, vote no to wetlands. And this is a crab that exists on wetlands. And so where's the reasoning and the mentality except that we exist on fear? Oh, my God, we're going to lose our private property, you know, and there's going to be regulation. And God knows there is problems with regulation. There is too much regulation.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because we need to free the bureaucrats. We stick them into these big horrible buildings that have all kinds of terrible conditions in them, and they give them and drown them in paperwork. I don't see any bureaucrats walking around with boots out on the tide flats looking at what's going on or measuring water quality or looking at all the stuff that people love. So we stick them in buildings and then we say, you're not doing your job because the legislature doesn't want them to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
The government doesn't want them to do the job. They want to employ and pretend they're doing it. But let's be honest about it. We're not protecting much of anything out there.
Right.
And we just have regulation, and then everybody balks against the regulations. Mm-hmm. But I think what we really want, a very conservative part of the view, is clean air, clean water, you know, good fishing and all that. If we say that's really our goal, that's what we really need to be doing. And government has a role in that, but it's citizens that really need to be involved, you know.
Which leads citizens. To my next question. How do we inspire teachers and parents and citizens and all, you know, all of the above to cultivate an interest and a love and a respect for our marine, you know, environment.
Well, you know,
because we eat it. We certainly, yeah. We all love it here, especially here, this area.
Well, you know, places like Gulf Specimen is mm-hmm. a start. Because mm-hmm. so many kids, so many schools come down here for field trips. And they come in kind of like, you know, they don't really know what to do. They're kind of like out of their realm.
Mm-hmm.
They're out of the
their
classroom.
Comfort zone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they leave just like overjoyed. They leave excited about the ocean and about the environment. And so I think if we had more places like Gulf Specimen, that would totally just like change everyone's perspective on things.
Okay. Suggestions you have? Any ideas? How can we cultivate this?
I definitely agree with what she's saying, getting more people out there. Even if it's not just Gulf Specimen, doing field trips out to your local wetland area or, you know, mm-hmm. just something and mm-hmm. letting them see it for themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of, like we were talking about earlier, like being in the cities and not having that experience and not seeing it. I mean, I think seeing it is believing sometimes, and I think we need the change.
Yeah, and maybe we can get them to incorporate a certain portion into their curriculum.
Class, yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
their class, you know, work. Their teaching materials, using it. I mean, I don't, you know, it just seems. Of course, I think really coming and visiting is a key, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because once you come and you see and you touch and you just even stand back and watch the little kids,
sure.
They are so fascinated, you know?
Yeah.
They are just in heaven. And that seems to be a real key to doing that. But we've got to get the word out, okay?
Yeah.
That is something we have to do. Right now, I'll ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen, and again, we are talking with members of the community of Gulf Specimen Marine Lab. Jack, are you currently involved or engaged in any particular research that you can share with us? And you had a very interesting story that you shared with me before we came on the air about that little sea roach again. I loved it. And if you don't mind, I think it's just fascinating. Share some of that stuff with us.
Okay. It's not current research, but it's something there. You know, we'd have a little YouTube video that you can look at under Gulf Specimen's YouTube channel. But friend at the New York Aquarium back in 1975 came to me and said, "We want to shake up the city and really go. Can you help us go get us a monster?" And I said, "Yeah, what's your budget? We'll go to the Loch Ness and go drag it out." And he said, "No, we haven't got any money." He said, "Well, good." And then I told him about this creature that this fisherman brought by years back. And he came in this seedy old truck, and this old shrimper comes in and he says, "I got some specimens y'all want to buy." He says, "Because I know you've never seen these things before." And I thought, "Oh, God, you arrogant twit." Of course, I've been on shrimp boats and everything else like that. And I said, "Well, you know," and he says, "Yeah, just come on out in my truck. I know you've never seen those things before." So, well, okay. So I go out in this truck and my jaw dropped. I mean, my God, he had bunches of stuff, boxes of, you know, stuff there. And I'm just shocked that I've never seen anything like this before. And the prominent thing was this huge bug that was actually – it's a huge roly-poly. It's mm-hmm. called a giant sea roach, Bathynomus. And I said, wow. And I said, "Where did these come from?" And he says, "About 100 miles offshore or 150 miles offshore." And he was a royal red shrimper from Fernandina Beach. And he brought his boat over and he came into Appalachian. So basically everything I knew in my experience both here and then in Madagascar and other places mm-hmm. that I traveled around on was shallow water, you know. under, you know, 50 feet, 100 feet, whatever else it is, where you can dive, snorkel, or whatever. And this guy drops off to, 1,500, 1,800 feet. And this was what was down there. So we put together an expedition. I found a boat that was actually able to do this stuff, and we loaded it all up, and we went out there, beat our way out in the middle of a freezing winter time, terrible seas, but we pulled these things up, and we caught six of these giant sea roaches, plus, you know, barnacles that are on the bottom that were last seen on Earth, you know, something similar in fossil records, hundreds of millions of years, ancient type of creatures that are out there. So we brought them to New York, flew them up there, and turned the city upside down is actually what he wanted. So it was on the New York Times, the NBC, Today Show, I mean, all sorts of things like that. And it really shook up the city because New York woke up to that January morning to watching televisions of this giant bugs crawling around looking like something out of the Three Mile Island, you know, plant that has escaped of this some alien outer space thing. So just a little while ago, we were just watching on some little PBS program or something like that. And there was a picture of the sea roach, you know, and some kids looking at it and talking about it. And it's kind of nice to see
the
years
great.
Have passed. And from this discovery, you know, all the things that have happened. But, you know, I've been very fortunate to be involved in a lot of these things. All the great interest in turtles. Well, you know, we're talking about how sad to see one going, well, you guys can't quite imagine what it was to go to the Carabel docks in 1962, and then they got these great big loggerheads catching the boat, and they're getting 5 cents a pound in the rough or 15 cents dressed. So they'd be sitting there butchering the turtles and blood going all over the place and throwing the meat. And then you go to the restaurant in St. Mark's and even, you know, Faber's and all that stuff, and there was turtle on the menu. And And then so we went from that to where we are today with turtles. And I'm one of the culprits that helped that because I wrote, you know, the book Time of the Turtle. And I worked with, you know, with Dr. Archie Carr, and then he wrote a number of books in University of Florida. And we help kind of bring the attention to people. So I use the written word in every which way. I use the written word to try to protect the wetlands and to try to say this is what we are using. I use the written word. I love to use the word and good language and everything else, but it's a weapon. Honest to God, it's a weapon, and I've used it, and I've launched it against the Capitol and against the governor and against the politicians and everybody else. And it's been effective because I can communicate. And it's really kept us from getting totally squashed over the years from the fallout from those types of actions. But we're making an impact. We have made an impact. Not as much as I would like to, not as fast. But what the encouraging thing is with these young people that we have here and all these kids that come by on the school buses And I've had, you know, alumni coming back and saying, you know, instead of being four, they're now seven and say, where's the red-footed sea cucumber? That used to be in this tank and it's not over here. So, you know, before anybody even knew what a red-footed sea cucumber was. So it's making an impact. It's getting there. And we've got to keep getting the word out.
Yeah.
There's one thing that hasn't been discussed today that comes to mind. It's important for people to understand about Gulf Specimen Aquarium and why it is so exciting and so different. We've talked about the excitement of the children. What makes it so exciting and different is the touch tanks.
That's true.
These are not, you can reach in and touch the animal. These are shallow tanks filled with sea animals, and you can pick them up. You can smell them and listen to them and get right up in your face with them. This is an experience immersion tank where you can become one with these animals just like you were at the beach. There's nowhere else that has this kind of touch tank experience. And that is what the kids get so excited about when they come in. And at first they're a little, some of them are hesitant and they don't want to, and then they actually are holding a starfish and the light goes on and they just, they connect.
It's alive.
Yeah.
Not just little kids, but big kids.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I remember when I came and you all had octopus at that time.
Yes.
But that was one thing that I just didn't want it wrapping around me. I couldn't. Dad kept saying, Liz. And I was like, oh, Derek, I can't. I just can't do it. But it was fascinating. It was just so very, very.
We've had people say that just holding hands with an octopus has just changed their lives.
Oh,
I've had,
you told me.
Connection of the tentacles. When that goes around your hand, you'll never feel that sensation any other way. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing. And there was one elderly lady that was there, and she says, I've been through a lot of experiences. And she says, now my life has really changed.
I love them, but they creep me out.
Yes.
When I hold them, I'm like, no, take it back.
Well, now you understand why I was feeling that way.
Yeah, me and Anna had to switch one to another tank one day, and we're like, just scoot into the butt.
They're just fascinating. What I also wanted to have you talk about, I don't know if you're going to have it this year, but the photo arc. And I saw on the web, I guess it was, that your squid was the 4,000th critter photograph. So talk to us. Tell us about this photo arc and how this publication evolved. I mean, if you haven't seen it, to my listening audience, you need to. They have the most realistic, beautiful photographs of all kinds of animals, not just marine animals, that you will ever see.
Well, it's National Geographic. Right. It's all one individual, and a fellow named Joel Satori, and he was on Geographic staff, and then, I don't know, it's sort of a long story, but he couldn't travel anymore, for his wife was very ill. So he was in Nebraska, and he just said, well, I'll just go to the zoo and start photographing these animals. So he developed a way to do that of basically putting them either on white backgrounds or black backgrounds so that you're not in context of a habitat. It's just the animal, the pure animal. So then he started building a collection, and he went around and over a period of, I think, 3 or 4 years, managed to get close to 4,000 animals. And then he kind of strayed into Gulf Specimen one time. I didn't really know who he was or what. I just heard somebody from Geographic was coming by, and it was okay. And then we met at night, and he was we walked out on the dock, and several things went on. It was a real magic night because, first of all, we kind of realized who we were. He had an article in one of the same issues that we had published also in as well, and then we also knew all these people in common in the Geographic staff. And then we go out, and I'm saying, I flip on the lights, we have this lift net where we have creatures come through, and you have lights, and they're attracted to it. But I hadn't seen any squid in a long time, like a year or so. There just hadn't been any squid in this thing. So I showed him this lab. We had lights on, and then I press the button, and this net comes up, and it's full of squid.
Wow.
And so we took that, we got up the next morning. We went down to the lab that night, and we put the squid in the tanks. And as soon as I turned on the lights, and he saw the tanks, and he said, oh, my God. He said, I've never seen this many invertebrates and fish under one roof in any one place. Mm. So the next day, we had a conveyor belt going of staff of basically getting things out of the tanks into buckets, going into this room we had set up where he had his tanks set up there. And it was one right after another. And he did something like 63 animals photographed in rapid succession, and the squid was broke the record. He was up to 3,600 and whatever it was, and the squid was the 4,000th one, and the squid, they're just spectacular, beautiful animals. They have flashing chromatophores and color and green eyes, and they're just like little spirits and that stuff. And he's caught it.
He is back with National Geographic doing this. Is that not correct?
Yes. His staff with Geographic, but most of his work now is not, assignments. He covered the Gulf oil spill, by the way, and we had lots of interesting stories about, for example, they wouldn't let them get off the ground with the airplane, their chartered airplane, and they were kept on because they were found it was National Geographic, and they were going to fly out to where the oil was, and talked about how he did manage to get out anyway, and they got, you know, it's a great issue that he put out. So we were connecting with all these stories, and then we still work with him now. So he's made, I think, 4 trips to Gulf Specimen. Last year when we had the sharks in Chablis, he was our guest speaker. And what was really funny is the day before, our event was on Sunday. Saturday, he was in New York, and he was in Times Square, and for about 3 hours, the entire Times Square, with all the flashing lights and all the everything else, was all dedicated to Joel's pictures of gorillas leopards and, you know, birds and other things like that. And the next day, he's in Panacea, Florida.
Jack, he's doing this to have a record of species before they go extinct.
That's right. Because we know the world is in problems, and he's trying to use this as his message, as you know, as we all are, to say that's in trouble. And then the very name of PhotoArk, that's what he's doing. Well, it was very interesting that when we had the oil spill, for some reason, there was talk about, gee, we might be the only place that has animals left after this. I mean, everybody was freaked out at the time, and said Gulf Specimen, because we were madly retrofitting it so that we could, you know, keep the water in and not depend on the bay water and everything else that might be polluted, is we could be, you know, this could be a Noah's Ark.
Mm-hmm.
So we started this Operation Noah's Ark, and people went nuts. They were contributing. They were working. They were working in the sun. There were people, I mean, talking about, you know, housewives and other people out there digging ditches to lay pipes and everything else like that. And it was just – and then I realized there's PhotoArk, there's Noah's Ark, there's every zoo, every rehab facility, every bird facility, every St. Francis, every wild mammal place – all of these things are all part of this inherent part of our DNA,
mm-hmm.
which says we have to save our planet. We have to save the life around us. We know these are the right things to do on the right levels. We just have to get right with doing it. And that was part of it.
We are almost out of time, and I still have about 5 questions I want to make sure that I asked you first.
Okay.
Are there any endangered species around here, locally, statewide, what, you know, in this area, put it that way, that we need to be aware of?
There are so many of them, you can't even begin
really?
To count.
Oh, that's not good. I don't want to hear that.
From birds to gopher tortoises to, you know, I don't know, you know.
Right,
including the sea turtles.
Yes, and the sea turtles are a big one, and that's when we have our sea turtle releases. But, yes, and the FWC does a really good job of just describing what's out there and what the problems are.
So
protecting is another issue, but talking about it.
Is overfishing still a problem?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And not using proper equipment or not disposing of your equipment properly.
So that is
everywhere.
A continued problem.
Yeah.
In these last few minutes, and I know you've shared it already, but just kind of give us a brief overview of what's coming on next Saturday, which will be your Sharks and Chablis event. Just kind of tell us real briefly, whomever, what's happening and why people should attend. And it's a great, great, great event. I add that to it.
Well, we're going to have field, you know, tour guides. We have the huge silent auction, which I'm giving away a free dog training class.
That's right. Tell us real briefly about your dog training, because you're in the...
So I dog train here in Tallahassee under... It's just called Morgan's Dog Training. And I partner with Perky Pets, which is just like a boarding facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a place that I just, you know, bring people to. But if you guys want to follow me on Facebook, it's Morgan's Dog Training, and that will be where all that information is. But yeah, I plan on giving away something at the rally. Another partner of mine, he's a groomer. He's giving away something at the auction. So if you guys have dogs, be sure to go out there. So we've got that, and then we've got live music, and who doesn't want live music? Plus, we're going to have beer and wine. So live music, beer, and wine always pair well together.
And don't forget the seafood, Seine Yard Restaurant.
Yes.
Again, they are fantastic.
They are. They've been doing this. They've been donating to her year after year for this.
I have one question that I didn't even get to ask you. Maybe you can answer it very quickly. Who or what is a bubble butt?
Ask them.
That's you, Anna.
Okay, so Bubble Butt is one of our sea turtles that we have at Gulf Specimen. She's a green turtle, and she kind of, she's developed a little air bubble that's hidden in her.
So she can't dive.
She's kind of like
so
floating.
Her butt floats upward.
Okay. Well, I read about her, and I had said, oh, I forgot to ask them about Bubble Butt. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. And again, I would like to extend my sincere appreciation for your time and coming to share all this information with 411 Team.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks for coming. It appears we're at the end. I told you we would run out of time. So many thanks to my listeners for the privilege of your ear and time. Be sure to join us next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.